Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Whether you're looking to buy, build, or refinance, Busey will guide you through the home buying process. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land-Grant University in Fargo, North Dakota, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's the 12th day of April, a Thursday afternoon. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in our program, Hans Kondel, an agronomist here on the NDSU campus, will talk about the potential for producers in this area to switch from spring wheat to other crops. Surprisingly, one of those is soybean, and when that would take place, it'll take some time. We'll discuss that with him. We'll close out our time together by discussing the agricultural weather forecast too. That with Mike Tenor. He's at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. He has some news about the very cold April we've had and maybe some connections to the summer months. So stay with us as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Dan, thanks for being with us. Why is it that soybeans have managed to hold on to about 10 cents gain for the day?
Well, I think number one, we had another big export sales number come out this morning. I still think it's finding support from the Argentina purchases that were announced earlier in the week. And I think probably one of the main reasons is that's where all the shorts are at. Farmers, I think, are fairly aggressive sellers or have sold in this 10, even from 975 to 1025, and a lot of those sales are already 50 cents out of the money. So I think, you know, that's where the shorts are. And so it's able to maintain, you know, the strength, and it keeps wanting to climb the wall of worry. I mean, a week ago we were talking about China tariffs, and that seems to, at least for the time being, seems to be moved back to the back row anyway. But I think a lot of it is strong export demand, and the small guy is heavily short, and that's what keeps this market firm and I think in position to move higher as we go on into the growing season. I was just looking at some seasonal patterns here. And I know I've been to the horse races enough times that the fastest horse doesn't always win. Actually, I was at the horse race in Sam Houston Park last Friday night, and out of the 10 races, three races were won by long shot. So, you know, but when you look at calendar year highs for November soybean futures, only 23%, this is over a 40-year period, only 23% of the highs are made during January, February, March, and April. Now, you got 57% of the highs are made May, June, July, and August. And the month that stands out the most is June, with the most highs. And then July and May is kind of divided. But when you look at the month of April, out of the last 40 years, November soybeans have only made an April high twice. One in 1981, and that was after the short crop of 1980, so we were on our way down from lofty prices and prospects of a big crop. And in 1986, and 1986, of course, was the year where we were pulling the plug on the reserve and we were emptying out all of those supplies that were tied up. So when I look at this, I just say statistically, the odds still favor soybean prices moving higher into this May, June, July timeframe. Now, when I look at my cyclical work, again, there's nothing perfect about it. There's nothing perfect about any system. But I think the low that we made here last week on this soybean tariff deal is going to go down as a late 8 to 9 week cycle low. It came on week 10 rather than week 8 or 9. And I think we're now beginning a new 8 to 9 week cycle phase to the upside. And I would say it should be 4 weeks up. So I'm inclined to think that that beans have a reasonably good chance of moving higher as we go on into the first 10 days or so of May. And I think that will probably be another pivotal time frame that will determine whether or not, you know, what kind of weather we have in May, what's happened. Are we seeing acreage switches from one crop to the other? And then we'll probably get USDA's supply demand table for the month of May with the new crop supply demand. Now, then I look for the market then to maybe weaken into a June low. And then I think it's got another shot at going higher as you go on into July. So I do understand that farmers have to manage risk. That's part of, you know, being a farmer. But you need to manage risk that you have the opportunity to take advantage of higher prices based upon, I think, the seasonality of soybeans of climbing higher as you go on into May, June, July, and then we'll kind of see what the growing season is.
And for corn, do you have a similar set of numbers?
Corn is similar. 50% of the highs are made during May, June, July, and August. Again, June, July is really where the big cluster is, and that is kind of, I would say, if between mid-June and mid-July, if the rains come, a good Corn Belt rain come in that mid-June to mid-July timeframe, well, we usually make a crop. Then we'll spend the rest of the growing season arguing about what the yield is, but the crop has been made with that big Corn Belt rain. So that's why I think June and July really stand out in corn. Now, when you look at over 40 years of data, only 32% of the highs were made during the first 4 months of the year of January, February, March, April, May. Now, in April, we made a high in 1981. Again, that was after a short crop and we were on our way down. 1997, that was when we lost the Asian demand. And then 2004 and then 2014. Of course, we were still coming down from those major highs that were posted during 12. So we were in a long-term bear market. So then May, really rare. You only have two highs during the month of May. That was in 1978 and year 2000. And 2000 was one of those sideways type years. I think we stayed within, you know, a 20-cent trading range all summer. So again, statistically, the odds would favor that prices have a good chance of moving higher as we go on into that June-July timeframe. So, like I said, the fastest horse doesn't always win, and but these are guidelines. And again, I think if farmers feel that they need to manage risk, and I know they're getting all kinds of pressure from bankers, and they're getting pressure from just the fear of all of these unknown outside forces. We could be in another major conflict or war yet before the day's out. I don't know. So if a farmer needs to manage risk, I think he needs to manage it that he has upside potential to take advantage of seasonal price strength.
Hey, Dan, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you can listen to all of our programming, or most of it, on demand anytime that you would like. You can find it in iTunes, on Stitcher, Google's Play Store, and, of course, in the NPR and NPR One apps. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with the Farm Bill. The House Agriculture Committee has released its version of the Farm Bill. Here are some of the highlights as reported by the House Ag Committee. The Ag and Nutrition Act of 2018, it says, works to address the five-year 52% decline in the farm economy by providing certainty that an extension of current policies cannot provide. The bill reauthorizes and strengthens, it says, the ARC and PLC programs. Producers are given an opportunity to make a new election between ARC and PLC, with several improvements to come through the 2023 year, including allowing a new yield update, opportunities for producers who were facing severe drought during the previous yield update, allowing reference prices to adjust to improved market conditions, and prioritizing the use of RMA data for administering ARC to minimize disparities between counties. On trade, the Farm Bill stands by the nation's farmers and ranchers, provides a strengthened safety net in authoring and restoring funding for vital tools for trade promotion and market development. The bill also maintains a longstanding legal authority for the Secretary to provide assistance to farmers and ranchers affected by unfair foreign trading policies. Two other items from the Farm Bill: conservation first. The bill prioritizes working lands conservation by retaining and folding the best features of the CSP, or Conservation Stewardship Program, into the nation's flagship incentive-based program for voluntary conservation, the EQIP, or Environmental Quality Incentives Program. This supports and enables a significant investment in emerging conservation practices like the use of cover crops. And finally, on crop insurance, at the request of virtually every farmer, rural banker, and rural business in the country, Congress says the Farm Bill protects crop insurance. Some improvements are made, but overall, the Farm Bill is expected not to fix what isn't broken. There are a couple of other notes coming out of Washington, D.C. It appears that President Donald Trump is open to re-entering the TPP. He says NAFTA may be negotiated for a very long time, and he's considering details that might allow E15 to be used year-round in the nation's gasoline supply. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason here on the North Dakota State University campus in Fargo. We're joined by Hans Condell. He's an extension agronomist for the state of North Dakota, specializing in soybeans and broadleaves across the state. Thanks so much for taking some time to spend with us. Over the last 10 years or so, the last 2 years, in fact, in particular, we've watched soybeans with more than a little interest from the state of Illinois expand into the Dakotas, parts of Minnesota. Last year, the number of acres that changed hands in North Dakota were unbelievable. In March, USDA told us you had more acres. By the time we got to June, we saw something like 6.5, 7 million acres of soybeans in this state. And it put you in a unique position because you're in the number six producing soybean state in the nation. How did that happen historically over the last several years?
Well, North Dakota has been a wheat-producing state, and then we saw the soybean coming in, and with the advance of new genetic material, there were more varieties available with earlier maturing classes. So we saw the soybeans moving north, and then traditionally the soybeans have been growing more into the eastern part, and we have also seen a movement to the western part of the state because there has been a little bit more rain in the last 10 years. So farmers were taking a little bit more risk in putting in soybeans, and they had some successes with it. Now, you mentioned that last year we had 6 million plus acres. However, we also had a drought in the western part of the state. So a lot of those farmers, they did not get the yields as they were hoping for. But still, if you look at the prediction for this coming year, we see about the same number of acres projected to be planted in 2018 as last year. So although the yields were a little bit disappointing last year, still there's a lot of interest. And I think that has to do with the fairly easy way of dealing with soybeans. It is an easy crop to work with. And the price has been good enough so that farmers actually make some money on the soybeans.
What makes soybean easy to work with compared to other crops that might be grown in the state?
Well, if you think of the early season crops, and I'm thinking about canola. Canola, you know, is prone to disease like sclerotinia. You have to pay attention to flea beetles. So there are production issues that are challenging. And then the harvest of the canola is a challenge. You either have to put it in the swath or you have to desiccate it. So when are you going to do that? So a lot more management aspects. So if you look at the ease of the crop, wheat traditionally has also been a fairly easy crop. But then we have had some years with scab, which has been a disease, a major disease, and also some of the leaf diseases. So farmers have gone to spraying the wheat, so it has been more intensive management than it was before. So comparatively speaking, you know, the soybeans are put in, there were some herbicides options, so farmers were able to do it. We do have some aphids that farmers need to control, but other than that, the harvest is fairly easy. You can go straight combine the soybeans.
Here we are in the second week of April. I'm wondering about the crop rotation and how long the soybean planting season in the state might be, and whether spring wheat acres might, if it's late enough, be put into soybeans or a different crop.
Well, that's a good question. Right now, the soil is basically frozen, and there's no outlook that we will be in the field in the next 10 days. That puts us in the last week of April at the earliest that you could start thinking about putting the small grains in. Typically, our planting window for soybeans is maybe May, the second week of May, ideally being done in May. Some push it into June, but we want to see the acres of soybeans planted before the end of May. So that is going to be like we plant wheat and the next day we might be planting soybeans or corn. Corn is a little bit earlier, of course, than soybeans. So it will be a very tight, season for planting, but we have really big equipment too. So once the farmers are starting to plant, it can go pretty fast. So it is too early to predict if they will actually have to make any changes or not. The plan to put wheat and you don't, it could be in a longer season crop. It could be either soybeans, but you could also move to sunflower, which is a late season crop. So you can go after wheat, several options. So what happens after, you put in, you change and you go to soybeans? Now the next crop you have to kind of think about, and then they probably will pick up a small grain crop or corn, because we have in the southern part also that people have wheat and corn and soybean in the rotation. So our growers have more options than typically a tight rotation with soybeans and corn.
Let me do a little quick explanation, make sure I've got this right. So in the state of Illinois, east of the Mississippi River, where we would do primarily soft red winter wheat, it would come after corn in the crop rotation. However, spring wheat comes after soybean in the crop rotation here in the northern part of the Corn Belt, the northern plains. But if they don't get that spring wheat in, they could put soybeans back in again on those same soybean acres?
Well, of course, we don't recommend it, but it is happening quite a bit that farmers do come back with soybeans on soybeans and then pick up their rotation after that decision. But what I mentioned, that you don't need to come back with soybeans. We have an option like, say, sunflower, which is a late season crop too.
And how late would it have to get into the planting season before they would make that decision not to put spring wheat into the ground?
Well, I think we have been traditionally planting spring wheat quite late also into May. So, you know, when we say we shift to soybeans by the 15th of May, that doesn't mean that they are not planting wheat after that. They sometimes do. And, you know, it really depends on the growing season. You can still put in wheat fairly late and still make a crop. That depends on the summer temperatures.
What group soybeans do you plant?
Well, we the northern part is the double zeros. The center part is kind of the zero. We have a few that is in the one maturity group.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's Hans Kandel. He's an extension specialist here at North Dakota State University.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenura is here. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Mike, it's been really cold across the United States and all of the growing regions. Can you tell me what that looks like compared to historical averages?
Well, this is going to go down as one of the 20 coldest Aprils of the last 124 years across the U.S. Corn Belt. These records go all the way back to 1895, and the middle part of the country here has been so far below normal over the first 10 days of April that even if we average pretty close to normal for the rest of the month, we'd still end up among the 20 coldest. And the way it looks right now, we're going to stay a little bit cooler than normal going forward, though as exemplified by today, we've broken free of this intensely cold setup. Temperatures are going to fluctuate a little more freely going forward, but still within a colder than normal range.
Is there a correlation between April temperatures and what might happen during the summer months?
Well, there's not a strong correlation, but we would say there is a connection, and it's because of what the data is showing us. If we take those 124 years and then take out the 20 coldest Aprils, it leaves us with 20 cold Aprils in the Corn Belt. But we're really focused on the coldest April since 1960, because that's what we consider the modern agricultural era for U.S. corn and soybeans. So of those 20 years, seven occurred since 1960. And if you look at those 7 years and then look at corn yields in those 7 years, six of them have below trend corn yields. The trend for this year is around 171 bushels per acre. And we can see from our data that most of the time you end up within 166 to 170 bushels per acre. You might say to yourself, well, it's a little bit early to be thinking about this because we all know that weather later in the summer is what really drives corn yields. And that's true. But what the data is telling us is that there is a bit of a yield drag that is often associated with this type of April. And it's likely because of what we know. It's hard to plant when it's this cold. And that's because of either the cold air temperatures or the cold soil temperatures, and you essentially carry a penalty with you through the rest of the growing season.
Do we see a similar downturn in the soybean yields?
Well, we don't, and that's part of the reason we think there's some validity to our thought process here, because we know that soybeans can be planted later than corn, and April weather, in theory, should not be affecting soybean yields as much, because soybeans are mostly planted in May and can even be planted in June. And if you look at the soybean yields in those seven growing seasons, there was a pretty equal mix of yields, and they all were pretty close to trend. Most of them were within one bushel of trend, which will put yields around 48 to 50 bushels per acre by the end of the growing season if history were to repeat.
A crop that I think might have be impacted would be spring wheat because it's planted earlier in the season.
Well, that's true. And the interesting thing about spring wheat is that they're a little more accustomed to some of these cold weather patterns that we've seen in April. 10 of the last 20 coldest Aprils on record in the U.S. Northern Plains occurred since 1960. But get this, only two of those 10 years had above trend spring wheat yields. So this is telling us the same story too. You have a penalty that's applied when you have cold Aprils like this. And again, even though it is going to warm up, it's been so cold for the first third of this month, it's unlikely we can fully recover from it.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather. He is in Chicago.